Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, yields and forward rates. I may not get to forward rates here today. That one's one of those really intense subjects that I may want to put off as long as I can. But I will go through yields today with you. And after we have had some look at the numbers and then a discussion about yields, then we'll have a quiz. And when you're finished with a quiz, you're done for the day. But a quick look over here at the markets just to see what's going on. There we go. That looks a little better. Well, actually, I'm going to have to bring it back down a little bit. Yeah. Okay. Now, as you can see, this was a bear day. It wasn't a horrible bear day, but it was a bear day. And you have the Dow down right here, looking at the Dow. You see that it's down 0.37%. That's enough to be noticeable. It's not terrible, but it's enough to be noticeable. And then the S&P 500, interestingly, was down somewhat less at 0.28%. And then the NASDAQ was down about a third of a percent. What you had was most of them were in the same territory of drop. It was not a bad drop, but because you saw it happen across the board, that means that it was actually a real bear day. There wasn't any doubt about that. How bad that bear day was, well, you know, nothing can be drawn from that. But if you take it over here to the other side of the world, Nikkei, I was going to say. The Japanese stock market was in a sour mood, but about in the later morning, it kind of turned around and it started trimming the losses. And by the end of the day, it was up somewhat. Now, on the other hang, the Hang Seng had a series of bad days, down. And to the extent that China is now going to be the dominant economic power of the world, we are going to have to pay more attention to that. Regardless of your sentiments about the country and its leadership and its ways and all that, it is now taking the place of the United States, which has stepped off the playing field. And so the health of the Hang Seng is becoming more and more an indicator of the health, certainly of Asia and of global markets in general. So we, as much as an old anti-communist like me would love to see China just vanish, we have to face the fact that it's the real player, it's the heavyweight on the stage. So if it goes up, that's kind of good for the world in general. That's saying that good things are coming, at least for the rest of the world. And so we come over here into Europe, and if you have a look over here, Europe was just in kind of a sour mood today. The broad measures of the European communities, stock markets, was pretty sour today, and the CAC was looking not good today. That's big companies on the Paris Exchange. So it wasn't great. But FTSE, the London Exchange, it sort of did kind of what the Japanese exchange did. Do you see how it started out down, and then it started trimming its losses, and by the end, it was up a little bit for the day? Yeah, so yay for the bulls on the other side of the Atlantic. Now, interestingly enough, the VIX, if I want to look real, just a quick look here at the VIX, you have in the red means that its volatility is going down. Green means that volatility is going up. So the volatility of the volatility here was a little bit odd today, because it started out, volatility was easing off, then volatility got stronger, and then volatility eased off again. So you have one of those days where there was like this surge of information that kind of got digested in price movements of stocks and all of that. But by the end of the day, the volatility was settling down. In other words, in a way, the markets were happy how it ended the day, on a bear note, but not a terrible bear note. Coming over here, we'll just have just a quick look at the oil markets. The crude was crude and Brent, both coming up a little tiny bit, but it's nothing really to talk about. Right now, we have a glut of oil. The oil supply is ridiculously high, and that's what's causing the oil prices to be very low. Way under what we like to see, 76 to 82 a barrel. The other side of that is, though, that as I had told you would happen eventually, gasoline prices are coming down because the major input to create gasoline is crude oil, and crude oil going down, eventually their gasoline and distillates like diesel and jet fuel and kerosene and plastics, all the things that are made from fossil fuels, even cosmetics and all that kind of stuff are made from fossil fuels, they should ease up in price too because the input oil is going down, so we should see these products getting a little bit cheaper. And we've seen that with gasoline. It's still not as low as I think it should probably be. Eventually, it may find its way down to below $3 a barrel, but still, we celebrate it. Here's a bad side to that, though. Obviously, and I've told you this before, low oil prices are going to drive a lot of producers out of business. They're not going to produce oil, and we will have the other side of that, where these countries that are flooding the market with oil are going to cut off that oil, and then prices are going to skyrocket into the $80, $90 a barrel range, and then gasoline is going to go up $4.50 a gallon. But right now we're living in a dream. We've got a nice low, low, low price of oil. Never mind the fact that smaller oil extractors are going to go out of business. We get cheap gasoline. Here's a problem with that, is that this slows down the movement away from the fossil fuels. That's one of the things. Look, right now, if I were to think about, well, should I buy an electric, a hybrid, or a gas car, and I see gasoline prices low, the average person is going to say, yeah, I'll just get one of my gasoline-powered car. It also suppresses investment in alternatives like wind turbine, wind fields, and solar, and geotherm, and nuclear. The fact that the old thing that we've always used is cheap deters moving away from it. Now, never mind climate change and all that. I'm not going to piss some people off in this class about climate change. I can tell you this, though, that in the business that I'm in, that I was in oil and gas, we all knew oil is going to be gone by the end of the century. It's just, we're going to suck it all out of the ground. What little is still in there, we're going to tear up anything we can do, we can get to. You know, fragile ecosystems in possibly low, deep places in the ocean, any place we can get oil at whatever price we can get it at, it'll be eventually, we can't get any more. And that's coming from an old oil man, and that's what I was. We all knew it would happen, and someday it will. So this transition to new technologies, it's these low prices like this just slow down the inevitable absolute necessity that will come long in the future. In your lifetimes, you guys are going to live a lot longer than I am, thank God. But so keep in mind that these cheap oil prices, they are a pleasure for the moment, but they do have consequences on the other side. For every bell that rings, someone is moaning in the graveyard. So keep that in mind as time goes on. I want to show you a couple of things here before I get to the main lecture today. I'm going to, if I click on the right. I bring up a little bit about sectors and sector analysis. And this isn't anything mathy. It's a part of what I'm trying to teach you, how to think and how to look at markets in general and dig in a little deeper. So let me start out with something, I don't know. Let's try SYY. S-Y. I do that every time. S-Y-F. This is Synchrony Bank. After I look at it, I want to show you something back here on this side. Now, Synchrony Bank is financial services. They seem to be showing up everywhere now. I used to make payments on my Amazon card. Now I make those payments to Synchrony Bank. And the same was true with Care Credit. I used to pay Care Credit. Now I'm somehow paying Synchrony Bank. They are expanding as a force in financial services. And if you look down here, we see, okay, 1.46 beta. Well, that's breathtaking. That's a very high beta, high-risk company. But we notice that they are profitable. No question about that. Their earnings per share is very handsome. PE ratio, they're undervalued a little bit. Fine. And they do pay a nice dividend. How nice. Yes, this is cool stuff. The question would be, is this Synchrony Bank, or are there other things that are pushed, larger forces at work? So this is where I'm going to come back here. And I want to show you something. Now, this thing has different names depending upon what person you're talking to. I call them sector maps. This shows you the size, relative sizes of different sectors of the economy and what the stocks in that sector did on average for today. As you can see, most of the sectors were on the bear side today. A few sectors were on the bull side, but this gives you an idea of, for example, notice the biggest one is technology. Why is that? It's because those companies like NVIDIA, like Microsoft, like Apple, their market caps, you saw them in the trillions of dollars. In other words, that is the biggest sector of the current U.S. economy. And then running up a healthy second is financial services. There they are. Showing that they are a big chunk of the market, and they were bearish today, and that was Synchrony Bank. It wasn't just Synchrony; it was that sector that was on the bear side. So it's kind of hard to say. It's not really appropriate to say, "Well, something Synchrony did sucked." No, they are part of a sector that was on the downside for the day. And that's kind of a good way to think about it. Don't always think, well, this stock went down. Well, that means it's something bad happened with the stock. Look at the sector. Whither the sector goes, so do the companies in that sector. And you'll see some other ones. What I'll do today is I'll show you a couple of technologies and financial services. And then I will, in a couple of subsequent ones, I'll show you healthcare and consumer cyclicals. But just to get you this idea, expanding how you think about the world around you, not the way common people do, but the way the educated do these things. And you are part of believe it or not, might not want to be elitists, but you're part of the elite. And we have to know more than the average person does and understand processes that are deeper than what the typical person or even the typical news media outlet would do. So let me take you over here. And I'm going to take you into the technology sector today, just a step in there. I don't know if you've ever heard of this company, but SYY, Cisco. Are any of you familiar with Cisco? Yeah, a couple of you are. I see a few hands up. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a behemoth in technology. I mean, the time I went down to Cisco, I was looking for this. I didn't know what I was doing. I said, I'm looking for the Cisco building. And this lady at the restaurant in the town said, "You mean the Cisco campus?" I thought, uh-oh. Campus. It's a campus. It's a little city of its own. That's how big this mother is, or this thing is. But anyway, let me show you Cisco. Did you remember the technology, that sector map technologies were down? Cisco's a technology. Do you see how the sector is the pull for the companies in the sector? Now, some will buck the trend. There's no question about that. But you will see this sector behavior. They're like herds. Investors in one technology stock would probably be investors in other technology stocks. So if the investor is bearish, he's going to kick the butt of all the stocks in that sector because he's bearish on it. Or that investment firm is bearish on it. So you're seeing that kind of phenomenon here in these. Now, I'm not sure this will work, but let me see how Apple did today. There you go. It was down too. See the sector effect on the different stocks? That's something that you'll, like I said, there may be a winner among the losers, but it's pretty consistent that it's not stocks really so much all the time. It's that they are just in a group of stocks that gets its butt kicked or it gets rewarded on a given day. It's worth kind of just knowing that as you are thinking about stocks, thinking about investments. And this is why you want to be, and you're going to hear me preach this gospel over and over again, more as the course goes along. This is why diversification is your friend. Not focusing on a certain, just one or two stocks or one sector of the economy. Well, I always invest in healthcare, or I'm investing in the financial sector. That's not a good idea because then you are pulled much harder by forces that aren't necessarily the entire economy's forces. That's why you want a broad-based, well-diversified, as we say, and you'll hear me say that term a lot, portfolio. That way you are not vulnerable to sector behaviors, which if you had all sector stocks, today would have been a really grim day for you. But if you diversified across sectors, it wouldn't have been so bad. Just a little bit of advice for you here. Let me take you on a little journey here. Eventually gets to one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. Let me see where I am. Yeah. But it starts, and I think I've told you this before, that there are a lot of ways you can divide up debt instruments. But one important way is to divide them into bills, notes, and bonds. Now, bills are debt that is due in less than a year, or less than or equal to a year. So if I say a one-year T-bill, that's a one-year treasury bill. You lend the government money for exactly 1 year, and you get paid back at the end of 1 year. That's how a T-bill works. Now, a note is from 1 year to, well, depending on whom you're talking to, 7, 10, or 15. It's kind of popular now. Anything that's 15 years or less, down to 1 year, that's a note. It's a debt that has to be paid back within 15 years. And a bond is any debt that is paid back in more than 15 years. 20-year bond, 30-year, 50-year, 100-year, they're long haulers. Now, here's an odd thing. consumer debt, your payments, you got a spreadsheet, you can calculate loan payments. Part of your payment goes for interest, and part of your payment goes on the principal. That's P-A-L, the principal. That's not how government and corporate debt works. Government and corporate debt doesn't pay any principal, anything on the principal, until the very end. And then it just gives you back all the principal in one shot. So corporate debt, corporate slash government debt, all it pays is interest. Then at the end, it pays back the entire amount it borrowed. And we'll talk about bonds, and we'll talk about debt more next week, but I'm setting something up here for you. There is an odd bills, however, let me explain. Like, if you bought, let's say, an IBM 30-year bond, we call the interest on bonds, we call them coupons. So you bought an IBM 6% coupon bond. Now, all bonds, all debt, we measure against $1,000 principal. We just say $1,000. And if it's $10,000, well, it's $1,000. But we always use $1,000 for the face value. What the company has to pay back at the end, the face. Okay. So let's say we had an IBM 30-year 6%. That would mean that every year, IBM would pay its lenders 6% of the $1,000. So every year for 30 years, if you got an IBM 6% bond, you get a check in the mail for $60 every year. And then at 30 years, you get one last $60 check and you get your $1,000 back. They send it as two separate checks. I'm not sure about that, though. But yeah, so that corporate and government debt isn't anything like consumer debt in that way. It's just how it's done. You get just the interest all through the life of the loan, and then at the end, you pay back what you borrow. There is one exception. Short-term debt instruments, bills, do it a little bit differently. Bills are called discount paper. And this is true of government, a T-bill, a one-year T-bill, a 30-day commercial paper issued by a corporation, they don't do it quite the same way. The way they do it is that, let's say you borrowed $100,000. A corporation borrows for 30 days $10,000. That's called commercial paper. It's very, very common. Well, in fact, the company gets, they get that paper for, let's say, $99,970. And then the company that issued it has to pay them back $100,000 in 30 days. It's called discount paper because you get it at a discount. And your interest is the difference between what you bought it for and the $100,000. That's how all short-term debt, well, almost all short-term debt works. It's discount paper. I'm saying this, and I'm not really worried too much about how much you got that, but I do want to set it up so that I can show you a treasury auction. Now, the government borrows vast sums of money because it can't pay its bills. Its tax revenues are very low, and they're going to get even worse with the new tax bill. But the government actually puts, in the old days, and I'll use this because it's all electronic now, the government would simply put government treasury paper on tables, and then the giant lenders would go to the tables and they would buy paper. Buying the paper was lending the government money, under the understanding that the government would pay them back at the face value, and the investors would buy it at a discount to that face value. Let me give you an example of a treasury auction just for treasury, 1-year treasury bills. There will be a price, and then there will be a face value, and the difference between these is how much interest you earn. Now remember, face value is always $1,000. Always. And for the rest of this course, anything you do that has to do with finance of debt, practical or theoretical finance, $1,000 is what you get back. That's our benchmark. It just makes things easier for us. So the dollar interest that you make is the difference between the face and what you paid for it. That's all it is. And so from that, what we can do is we can calculate the yield. The yield on it would just be the dollar interest divided by what price you paid. That's all it would be. Okay, so we're going to go to an auction of 1-year treasury bills, an old-fashioned one. They're on the table, they're just sitting there waiting for someone to borrow, to lend the government money. Now, let's say you, sir, are a brand new customer. You want to buy a treasury bill at this auction. I am the hostess of the auction. My name is Mabel, and I see you come in. Well, hello there. You certainly are a new face around here. My goodness, you're good looking. Yes, you are. Are you here to buy a treasury bill? Well, we got some on the table here, and one of those has your name on it. Would you like to come over here and look at them? We got some pretty ones, the green lettering and filigree, and we got some blue ones. Which one do you want? Just pick it out. And you point to that one. I should like that one. That one goes with my shoes. No, it doesn't. Those are ugly shoes. No, anyway. Okay. Now, you notice that there are a lot of other buyers at this auction. This is a bidding auction where they are actually nudging each other. Well, I'll pay this for it. I'll pay this for it. And the best price is going to get it. So you're kind of with all these other ne'er-do-wells, and you see them, you know, offering prices, and I'm on your side. You said you'll pay $975 for it? Well, we're going to sell you that. Sold to you for $975. So you bought it for $975. In 1 year, now that we've recorded it, in 1 year, you're going to get a check in the mail for $1,000. That's how discount paper works. You pay a price lower than what you're going to get back in a year. So here we go. Well, you got $1,000 for $975, so your interest is $25. That's how these work. Your interest is the difference between the $1,000 and what you paid. So in this case, our yield is going to be $25 I made $25 on an investment of $975. Be careful here. There's a temptation to put the thousand there. Don't. You didn't pay a thousand. You invested $975. So your yield is going to be $25 divided by 975. And if you work that out, that's going to be 0.0256, something like that. So it's 2.56% yield on it. You say that's kind of a low yield. Well, yeah, these are super safe. I mean, you're not going to get a lot. You're not taking any risk, really. Matter of fact, this is almost, that's like the risk-free rate almost. That's why we use those one-year T-bills as a proxy for the theoretical R-sub-F. Okay, well, so that's all there is to the math of this. That's all I would ask you to do on a quiz. No, not on the one you're going to take today, but on quiz four or an exam. It's just know how to find a one-year yield. However, we want to go one step further here. A year later, we're having another one-year treasury bill auction, and I see you. Well, there you are again. Well, you're coming back. You must have gotten your $1,000 check, and you want to do this again, don't you? Yes, you do. Okay, so what we're going to do is I look at that table, and I've got a juicy one there for $975, and you say, wait a minute there, you fat broad. I don't see anyone around here to buy those. So who am I bidding against? Well, I don't know. So what are you going to do if you don't have any competition? Aren't you going to offer me a lower price? Let's say that I finally decide that I'm going to let you offer me $950 for this. Same rule applies. You're going to get $1,000 back at the end. That's how it works. You get a check for $1,000. And you can actually do this. You can buy treasury. I don't know. You used to be able to. You could even do it through your bank back in the old days. But we've got $50 of interest this time. You pay $950, you get back $1,000, so you got not $50. So let's get this yield. $50 is what you made on an investment this time of $950. If you work that out, that's 0.0526 or 5.26%. And now you are seeing an example of one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. Let's try this. Sir, what happened to the yield on that paper as the price went down?
The yield went up.
Bingo! It's one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. It's not even a finance thing. It's just a math. It's an arithmetic phenomenon. Whenever price goes down, yield goes up. Whenever price goes up, yield goes down. In other words, price and yield are inversely related to each other. In everything you want to look at, bonds, stocks, anything, prices going down imply are mathematically the same as yields going up. Now let me tell you the scary part of that. And it comes from something called bid to cover. You notice that as there are more bidders at an auction, that brings the price up. More people bidding. It's like on eBay. Yeah, have you ever bid on eBay? When there's hardly anyone, you can get a pretty darn good price. But if there are a lot of people bidding, the price just keeps going up and up and up. So if there are a lot of lenders to the government, in other words, buyers of the paper, you will have the prices rising, which means that the yields will be falling. However, here's what's going on now. We are not having those buyers show up at the auctions. The bid to cover used to be four bidders for every cover. Now we're down to 2.53 in the last auctions over the last couple of months. There is no one coming. The lenders coming to the auctions just aren't showing up. Well, who are those lenders? Well, they're certainly not you and me. Those lenders are China, Japan, Europe, Canada, other Asian countries, Australia. They were the ones who came to the auctions, bid on them, bid the prices up, which kept our interest rates low. And now they're not showing up. They have said F you to us. And that is a big problem, because whether that interest rate goes on those base benchmark treasuries, that's where all interest rates want to go. And the only thing that we can do to keep the interest rates from rising because of a lack of bidding on our auctions is to print money, which is what we are going to have to do. And what does printing money do? It creates inflation, and then it creates the cancer metastasizing expected inflation. And so this is where we are now. The political environment affects in its own lockstep way the interest rate environment. And the only way we can fight those interest rates rising, because essentially we're selling the paper at lower and lower prices because we've got to get someone to buy it. So it goes off at 990, then 980, then 970. It goes down, and that's what's happening now. So there is the backdrop, and this is the thing. These kinds of details are what we can't explain to the people, you know, the average person. While the interest rates are going up, it's just ridiculous. The Fed ought to print more money. They don't understand the interlocking nature. That's where you come in, and that's where it's not really a matter, well, we got to teach them how this works. You're not going to be able to do that. We just have to get the job done as best we can, and then figure out what is the new bread and circuses we're going to get to them while we fix the problems underneath the underlying problems. But this is a window on how this whole part of finance works and how this locks, this links up with larger macroeconomic phenomena that we are experiencing right now. Glut of oil. Supply goes up, so the price of oil and gasoline and all that goes down. Interest rates that should be going down, but they can't seem to keep going down because something is keeping them from going down. Well, guess what's doing it? No one lending us money anymore, so we have to offer it at lower prices. We have to take a lower amount in order to get at least some scratch in to pay the bills of the government. And then all of a sudden, where the hell is this inflation coming from? Well, this is obviously, it's just jacking up wages, minimum wage going up, or it's corporations raising their prices to rip everyone off. We know differently. We know that there are very powerful but not obvious processes underneath it. Now, here's what I need you to do. I want you to log into Attendance Radar and get yourselves hooked in for the day. Ready? Here we go. Now, I stopped it at about 7 minutes. Now, once you are finished with Attendance Radar, I will put the password on the board. You take the quiz, and then that's all I have for you today. I thank you.